Well, it's great to be over at Barclays again for a coffee with Henk. That's Henk Potts. Hi, Henk. How are you doing?
Nice to see you again.
Great to see you too. So there's been lots going on since we last got together. Very long, hot summer. Looks like even longer, even hotter. Let's talk about that, its impact on the economy. Yep. Let's talk also about Brexit. We always talk about Brexit, and there's tons to talk about in terms of what the Prime Minister has just laid out for her vision for Brexit, wherever that is going.
You've managed to get a whole minute in terms of the preview, and we've not mentioned the Donald yet. Is he coming today?
We're going to talk about the Donald. Let's talk about oil prices. Yep. What's going on with oil prices too? If that's good for you.
Sounds perfect. Let's do it.
I'm ready.
I'm energised.
So we've had a big heat wave. We've had a World Cup, which even I, as a Scotsman, have enjoyed every single minute of that.
It's the last match you enjoyed.
Well, it's been really good. Go on. What's the economic effect of the weather and the sport?
Well, what we can say is, of course, the UK economy got off to an absolute disastrous start in the first quarter. We know that growth, even when it was revised up, was very poor, only 0.2% quarter on quarter. And you look back at that time when we were talking about the beast from the east, of course, talking about subdued business investment as a result of Brexit. And alongside that, there was elevated inflation, which was impacting disposable income. So it was a really tough first 3 months to the year. But actually, if you look at the most recent data, and the ONS, of course, have now moved to this monthly calculation of GDP, it actually shows you that May was a pretty good month. We saw growth month on month of 0.4%. And some of those elements that you were talking about really starting to filter through. So the good weather, the World Cup run that we've seen more recently. We had the royal wedding, of course, and that was all seen as good news. But the good weather we saw, particularly over those bank holiday weekends, was really good news. Some of these retailers that had such a tough time over the course of the past few months, getting a little bit of a respite from that. The bad news is, of course, one thing we know in the UK is we can't rely on our football team and we can't rely on the weather. And it's a little bit too much pressure on the royal family to keep coming up with a wedding every other month, one would suspect. So, yes, it's been a little bit better in terms of the UK economic backdrop. How sustainable that is a little bit more debatable.
Well, a World Cup, you know, you talk to advertising guys, and the a World Cup or an Olympics or a presidential election are always quite good for consumer spending for different reasons. Has the World Cup effect been overblown? What do you think we're going to see?
I think it's temporary, but I think it's been an important boost, as I say, to a sector that's really been struggling. If you look at beer sales, if you look at big screen television sales, they've all been very strong. Waistcoats were very strong, of course. We had Waistcoat Wednesday with Gareth Southgate. Marks and Spencer's telling us waistcoats were up 35%. So these are lovely little stories. Long-term impact on the UK economy, far more debatable. But I think it's been a feel-good factor, and sometimes that's important as well.
What do you think that means, though, in terms of what the MPC will do next? They're now gathering this data.
Yep.
They've got their agents running around the country trying to work out what's going on. What do you think that means in terms of a rate rise or not?
Well, I think the data has certainly been more resilient than many economists had been anticipating. We know the MPC has been looking to hike rates to normalise policy for some time. They want some ammunition for next time, of course, there's an economic downturn. So it seems important for them. They've hinted it in the past. And what have we seen? Hesitation. Turnaround. Maybe we'll see that this time around again. But I just think the data has been strong enough. The commentary from individual members has been significant enough to suggest that that hike in August is certainly seen as being on the cards. The market's certainly betting on that. There's an 88% chance now that the markets believe we will see that hike from 0.5% to 0.75%. And we'd probably go along with that. Where we go from here in terms of interest rates, I think is quite an interesting question. Markets talking about this idea that we'll see further hikes during the course of 2019. We don't think that's the case. We think actually the data is going to look a little bit worse as we go through the next couple of quarters and into 2019. And there won't be a strong enough backdrop for the MPC to continue to hike rates during the course of next year. So we see one and done hiking rates, say up to 0.75%, then rates on hold for a prolonged period of time.
And what's going to take us back? Is it just effectively we're going to come off the sugar rush of the World Cup and the weather? Or what actually, in your view, takes us down in the next two quarters.
I think we will see that. So household consumption growth, which has been better than anticipated, helped by the factors that we've been talking about, I think will ease back a little bit once again. Business investment, I think, will continue to be quite subdued against the backdrop of Brexit. As we start to see the reality of Brexit starting to shine through, that's going to create a difficult environment there. Construction, I think, will remain a little bit subdued as well. So you start to put that together, we still expect growth of just 1.3% during the course of this year. Similar figure for next year. That's the slowest growth that we've seen since the financial crisis. And that's not the sort of backdrop the MPC can realistically be hiking rates against.
And what's causing that, Hank? I mean, why is the UK unable to break out of these kind of trends at the moment economically? Is it a lack of investment? Is it the Brexit piece? Is it all these pieces actually just coming together?
The Brexit element is quite important because there's still an awful lot of uncertainty out there, and we've spoken about this before.
But the clock is ticking. You know, it's 2-3 months since we last sat down.
Yeah.
When we're next having this conversation, we're going to be talking about an October European summit. It's not looking good. Are people now realistically just planning for a hard Brexit?
I don't think we're at that point yet. They're still in that area of uncertainty, I suppose. But they're starting to weigh up what the different options are, and that's probably about as far as they can go. So we got the white paper, as we know, published by the government after that all-important Chequers summit where the vision was laid out. And there's some essential elements to that, as we know. So the creation of a free zone for goods, the creation of a common rule book, which is effectively regulatory alignment within this combined customs territory. The UK would also like to use EU agencies for things like chemicals, for aviation and for medicines. What they don't want, we're starting to get a feel for that as well. They don't want free movement of people, for example. They don't want supremacy of European courts. They don't want to continue to pay to the European budget system. So we understand that's reasonably okay. And again, there's a debate around politically how much they can push in each of those areas coming through. There's a gaping hole right there, though. An absolutely gaping hole, and that's around services. Think about services, 80% of the UK economy. If you're a bank, if you're a professional services company, if you're in technology, you still don't know what that means in terms of access to that all-important single market, and that makes life very difficult.
And really what you're telling us is that for 80% of the UK economy, we're heading towards no deal because there's nothing on the table for services right now. That's got to make everybody very nervous.
It does make very nervous backdrop for many business leaders in those particular areas. I think you're absolutely right. And there's still the potential, as you say, for a hard. So that would be seen, the white paper that was seen from Theresa May, assuming that goes through, and that's a bigger number, but assuming that goes through, that would be seen as a relatively soft Brexit. There's still the potential for a hard Brexit. There's still potential for a no Brexit deal.
And what kind of market reaction should we expect to that? I mean, we could have a new government.
Yeah.
The Prime Minister might fall. We could have a situation where, as you say, there's a hard Brexit. What should our listeners be thinking about in terms of the market reaction to inexorably heading towards no deal?
Well, if you look at the primary instrument that investors have been using to express concern around Brexit, clearly it's been in the foreign exchange markets and it's been around sterling. Presumably, the harder the Brexit that we get, the greater reaction we'll see in foreign exchange markets, and the impact will be felt quite dramatically in terms of sterling. So I guess even though sterling looks cheap from a valuation perspective, even though we expect interest rates to rise in August, which should be positive for the pound, and you could also argue to a certain extent investors have already priced in the worst case scenario to Brexit and that political uncertainty. If we were to get a no deal or a very hard exit from the European Union, one suspects that sterling will come under pressure at least in the short term. What we don't know is how long that effect's going to last. We don't know the impact of Brexit. Even if we were to have a hard Brexit, how long that's going to last. Clearly there'll be a shortfall at least in the short term, but is it possible, freed from this European bureaucracy, the UK can go out and do trade arrangements with the fast-growing parts of the world and make up for that shortfall? Absolutely, but it'd take time for that to filter through. In the meantime, I think sterling would come under pressure.
Okay, so you've just mentioned the T word. That's the trade word. Let me talk about the Trump word.
Yeah.
What is he doing?
Well, the last time we spoke, of course, we were talking about the risks around tariffs. those risks have become reality, and you should acknowledge that, and they've become material. So that's quite important. And the numbers have escalated quite dramatically. So for a long time, we were saying, actually, yes, this is a risk, but actually in the global context, the numbers are very low indeed. We were talking about $34 billion, $50 billion worth against Chinese exports to the global economy of somewhere around $2 trillion. But when you start to see the numbers now, and it's been reported, President Trump may look to focus on as much as $500 billion worth of Chinese exports into the US. You're almost getting close to the total number of exports from China into the US during the course of last year. Inevitably, that will have an impact because you tend to see this retaliatory action. So we heard from the IMF recently saying, actually, if these pledges around trade wars go through, the global economy would lose half of 1% of growth by the time that we get to the year 2020.
So when you read, if anybody has the Art of the Deal, Trump's book,
yes,
it's all about the deal. So I think as we're watching Trump more and more, Hank, we're seeing the Art of the Deal play out. He's basically saying, I'm taking certain things off the table. Let's see what you do in response. What happens next? And what should markets, what can we expect to see from markets as a result of it?
Well, the psychology is always quite interesting around this, and you're absolutely right, and economists have spent quite a lot of time looking at the Art of the Deal. They've been looking at Donald Trump, and what you tend to find is you get these destabilizing effects. He tends to destabilize a meeting before he enters it, and then you get these brash comments coming through. You get the social media flooded with some very aggressive tweets, and it looks like the end of the world is coming or a dramatic change to the world order. But what we should also recognize is there are some sensible people in the background doing some of the negotiations, providing exemptions, getting deals done. So you may look at the headlines and think this is so incredibly dramatic. In the backdrop, I think it's a little bit calmer than that, and hopefully that is in terms of the case.
So oil's been a really, really big theme, yep, since we last sat down together, almost a dominant theme in terms of commodity markets. The oil price moving around up and down, but you know, it's got to its kind of highest levels since November 2014 as well in the last 3 months.
Yep.
What can we expect to see, and what impact, what macro impacts it having?
Well, you're absolutely right. Markets certainly watch the oil price very closely indeed. For businesses, of course, it's a key input cost, a key cost in terms of transportation. For consumers, it's a key cost in terms of filling up their cars. The more they have to pay for petrol, the more they have to pay for diesel, the less disposable income they have to spend elsewhere. The oil price has been moving around, but it's been on an upward trend over the course of the past couple of years, almost doubled over the course of the past couple of years, getting up to around $81 a barrel over the course of the past month or so. So that's a significant increase compared to the $27 a barrel crude was trading at just a few years ago. A number of factors, I think, have been behind that. Stronger global growth, the more the world produces, the greater amount of energy that is required. We've seen production disruptions coming through. Seems a long time ago now, but we had that very cold weather in the Northern Hemisphere at the start of the year. Markets been concerned about instability in the Middle East, particularly around Saudi Arabia and Iran. Iran's important as well. Remember, significant producer of oil. Some expectations that US sanctions will return back on Iran. That would take another million barrels of oil, potentially more, out of global markets. Venezuela, again, a significant producer. Venezuela is in a country that's in economic, political, and social crisis. Production levels have come down quite substantially there. And of course, you've got the backdrop of those OPEC cuts that are introduced with its partners at the beginning of 2017, taking 1.8 million barrels of oil out of the market per day. There has been pressure, of course, to return some of that oil back to the market. Donald Trump certainly asking for that. It looks like particularly Saudi Arabia is keen maybe to, along with partners, to increase production levels by maybe somewhere around a million barrels per day. So that's helped to reduce the prices over the course of the past few weeks. And beyond that, you start to look at the supply and demand dynamic. Global economy in reasonable shape, depending on how the trade war break out, but we'd expect demand to be pretty good. But supply increases are coming through quite dramatically as well from non-OPEC countries. Look at the United States, look at Canada, look at Brazil. So we see the markets coming back into balance towards the second half of this year. And therefore, I don't think we'll continue to see prices rocket dramatically up from here. We think Brent will average somewhere around $70 a barrel during the course of 2018.
There's a sort of in spite of question here, I think, that's on the tip of my tongue, which is, in spite of Brexit, in spite of Trump, in spite of what's going on with oil or commodities, trade generally, the global economy is weathering all of this stuff quite well.
Really well, really well. More than weathering it, actually booming in certain cases. Look at the US economy, for example. We expect growth of 2.8% during the course of this year, benefiting from a strong US consumer, benefiting from robust business investment, helped, of course, by that huge stimulus program coming through. Even Europe. Europe was a strong performer last year, 2.4% growth, the strongest that we've seen in a decade. Weak patch through the first half of this year, but even taking into account that, we still expect European growth to be above 2% during the course of this year. Emerging markets, maybe we'll see some weakness because of trade wars and other factors, still adding to that global growth environment. Should recognise China still grew at 6.7% annualised rate during the course of the second quarter. Whether they'll be able to maintain that in the second half is perhaps a little bit more questionable if we do see an all-out conflict in terms of trade taking place. But they're adding to that global growth environment. So we still see global growth close to 4% during the course of this year. And even the International Monetary Fund, they've downgraded their growth forecast on the back of some of those gloomy warnings, still talking about global growth of 3.9%. And what we should also remember is that companies continuing to thrive at the moment, absolutely surging corporate profitability, particularly in terms of the United States, where they're benefiting from strong underlying growth, also benefiting, of course, from those tax cuts and higher commodity prices coming through. Look at analyst expectations for earnings there. They expect the S&P earnings to grow by 20% year on year during the course of 2018. European growth is still strong in terms of earnings, talking about 8% earnings growth there. So I think there's lots of opportunities still for investors out there. The headlines seem like it's all doom and gloom. The world potentially is under a significant amount of pressure. The corporate position doesn't look anything like that. And even the global position in terms of the overall number doesn't look too bad at all.
Well, I'm feeling a lot happier about that, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you are too. I really enjoyed having my usual coffee with Henk. From me, Ian Anderson, and everyone at Barclays, thank you.
Barclays Bank PLC is not liable for the impact of any decisions made based on the information contained or the views expressed. Barclays Bank PLC is authorised by the Prudential Regulation Authority and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. More details, including how you can contact us, are in the description of this podcast.